anyone looking for a great virtual private server host should check out today's sponsor, Linode. They make it super easy to get your own SSD-backed servers up and running in just seconds, with your choice of Linux distribution and location in one of their 8 data centers. Their servers are billed hourly with monthly caps for all plans and add-on services. Linode's base plan is just $10 a month and now includes 2 gigs of RAM. Their add-on services are super useful too, including backups, node balancers for easy load balancing, and Longview, which provides an easy way to keep track of detailed system metrics. Every Linode server includes SSD storage and runs on Intel E5 processors over a 40 gigabit network. Since you've got full root access to the box, you can set up just about anything you might want, like Docker containers, a private VPN or Git server, or encrypted disks. So our thanks to Linode, and make sure to check them out by visiting linode.com/doesnotcompute. When you sign up, use the promo code doesnotcompute2017, all one word, to get $20 in account credit, enough for 2 months of your own 2 gigabyte server. Take a look at Linode today by visiting linode.com/doesnotcompute. So, how's your week been, Sean?
Just a fireball of a week. I don't remember. I feel like I don't remember most of it, or at least the days all blurred together.
Is a fireball, is that a good thing?
Well, it feels like I'm in a shuttle headed towards Earth, and I'm burning up very quickly, and I'm going to crash into the Pacific Ocean.
Well, that doesn't sound great. Why such a fireball?
There's several things contributing. The biggest one would be a looming beta coming up for Design Collective. Actually, most of it is from that. And the biggest thing that I'm struggling with right now is wanting to refactor things, but knowing that I don't necessarily have time to do so. So I'm going through and making small changes as per requests by my coworkers. And in so, I'm finding things that I want to reorganize, things that I want to re-implement, and just knowing that I can't, if that makes sense. So it feels like I'm doing lots of monkey patching where I could be actually doing some cleaning.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I run into that pretty much every project. It's like, I feel as like I always kind of start off saying, oh, you know, everything is how I want it to be in this app, and I'm adding things in a very clean way and it's going well. And then it's like, okay, well, we're adding this feature here, so I guess I'll have to cut something. Okay. And now I had to wait an extra week because of some outside thing on this feature. So I have to implement it really quickly. And maybe I'll cut a corner here. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, there's 20 things I want to refactor in this app.
Yeah, the cutting corners adds up quickly because it's not something that stays in your mind, you know? So suddenly you've done it 4 or 5 times and that adds up really quickly. So I'm trying my best not to do that as much as I can, but sometimes you just can't help it.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, every single project, no matter who's running it, has some technical debt. That's just part of it. Because even if you have all time, sometimes you just spin your wheels on something and you don't have a great solution for it yet, and you just need to let it sit. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think the real bad thing is when it just, you let it pile up for too long without taking, you know, without saying, hey, I need a day or I need a week where I can go back and just kind of improve things, do some maintenance, make sure that everything is all nicely trimmed and cleaned up.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I guess it's just keeping that in mind, because I tend to, like, I'll see things and it'll just kind of gnaw at me. So for example, like if I see that I left something laying around my place, I'll see it and then I'll go and start working. And then eventually, like 10 minutes later, I'll get up and go move it, because I just can't get out of my mind that I saw this thing where it wasn't supposed to be. It's hard to keep my head clear when I'm doing that. It's really hard to stay focused on one thing when I am constantly finding myself.
Yeah, I think one thing that I've done in the past that's worked out kind of well for me, at least, is just whenever I see something like that, or whenever I'm like, okay, I know I need to fix this, but right now I just need it to work because there's a production bug or something like that. What I try to do is just go and make an issue with the tag on that and be like technical debt tag or something like that.
Yeah. I've been adding to dos. And so I will, if I do, for like last week, I had a little bit of spare time. So I just did a project wide search for to dos and started knocking out some of those. I don't know. It's just one of those things that kind of gnaws at me. Like I lay in bed at night and it creeps up into my mind. Like my night brain brings it back to the surface and I think about it.
Night brains are the worst.
I think that was a thing on Twitter, right? People saying night brain stuff.
Was it? I don't know. I haven't really heard that before.
Like you lay down in bed and then a tweet would be like, lay down in bed and then night brain : hey, there's hot dogs in the fridge. Or hey, remember that thing you said to that person today? And then it just kind of, it's anything that it spins off like a something that just won't let you go to sleep. That's what's been, I mean, so it makes it feel like a blur because I've been working more than I normally do just because there's a deadline coming up. And so I think I've been working enough to the point where the days feel the same. And so suddenly it's Friday and it doesn't feel like you had a clear separation between work and non-work through the week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely the same. I, as we were talking about earlier, I've kind of lost all sense of what day of the week it is on any given day.
Oh, right, yeah.
On Friday, I thought it was Monday. Today, I had no idea what day it was.
Yeah, so again, just like today, I made sure that I exercised, got on my bike and stuff like that. So that seemed to help a little bit, but it's hard. It's hard to maintain consistency in routines when you feel pressured by a deadline.
Yeah, I don't know that that's always a bad thing, though. I think in some ways the pressure, at least the pressure that I feel when I have a deadline, really actually is kind of what enables me to meet those deadlines. Like that stress and that extra push that I feel inside myself is usually really beneficial for me, at least. So I try not to fight that too much.
I get that. I understand that. I think for me, it is not quite as beneficial because then I will continue to work when I'm not productive and I know that I'm not being productive. I'll feel like obligated to do that in a sense. And when I know, for example, that if I were to go exercise for a bit, I would be more productive, I tend to not do that, which really shoots myself in the foot. But I think, you know, like, it's just different people respond to different stimulus different ways. And I don't know, for me, it's like when I've been in that situation for long enough, say a week, I start to get like a cloud over my brains, cloudy brains. And that's when I start to hack stuff together, right? That's when I start to do things that, that's when I start to cut a lot of corners and implement things in a way that I know maybe isn't the best way. It's just, for me, it makes me not care as much about the work that I'm doing, which is funny because I know that you're completely opposite in that situation. But that's kind of what I'm fighting right now, is maintaining the quality, maintaining that stuff even when I'm a little bit stressed out.
So you said you have a beta coming up pretty soon. When is that?
This coming up Wednesday.
So like 3 days from the time we're recording.
Yes. Yeah. In 3 days. Well, 2.5 days.
You feeling ready?
Because it's going to have to be, it's fine. Well, it's fine because it's so the people coming onto the platform, we know personally, you know, so it's not like this is a beta with strangers that will blog about what happens.
So it's a closed beta.
It's a closed beta. Yeah. It's a closed beta with, people that their owner is close with. One's her brother, you know, and a couple other people are, you know, close friends. So obviously I care a lot about what these people think because I just met them and I want to build something that they can use to help their businesses. But it's not like a throw me to the wolves beta where, you know, I'm going to read stuff on Twitter and people are going to make lasting first impressions from this. It's not the case. I have about another month before that happens. So
oh, that's good. That's good.
And just saying that makes me feel better about it because I hadn't thought about it like that yet. So yeah, I think it'll be good. I think that it's going to be really eye-opening. I'm actually really looking forward to that because I'm kind of in the place where I've been using this thing a lot and I've been, you know, making modifications and writing tests. And so now I almost have like feature blindness because I've been looking at it for so long. And so now when other people step in, I feel like I'm going to learn way more than I have been in the last couple of weeks because I'm so used to it now.
Yeah, that's always such an interesting thing. I feel like right now, honestly, I'm kind of holding off a little bit on sharing too much about Nest Notes stuff just because I'm in that anxious phase where it's like, I know it's just been me looking at this for a little while and it's scary. It's always scary to do that first big share, even when it's just with members of your own team.
Yeah, and I've opened it up a little bit. So people that are close, like Jamie, has helped me test it a little bit. My mom's helped me test it a little bit. Friend of the show, Kevin, has poked around a little bit too. And so actually, this is a really interesting point. I brought it up. So we have like a meeting on Fridays, just talk about the week. And I brought up the point, you know, that as a designer or programmer, one of the most interesting things to solve or think about is the assumptions that users bring to the platform. So our platform is the web. So people that use the web have certain assumptions about how applications should work or about how certain patterns are, right? So if someone gets used to using Facebook, then they're going to use other websites like they would, they might approach using Facebook. So if they see UIs are similar, they expect similar UIs to work similarly across the board, right? Mm-hmm. So what's interesting is that in working on this thing and designing some stuff for this thing, I'm trying to figure out what kind of assumptions are people bringing to the table and how can I help drive that? So it's not that I want to cater to all those assumptions just out of the box, but I want to use that information to kind of decide how I move forward with design, how I move forward with feature implementations. So that's been really eye-opening for me, is having people that are non-technical like Jamie use it. And she was like, well, I assumed this would work this way. And then I would ask, you know, why did you assume that? And then she would say, well, other websites did that, which is totally fine. I mean, that's how I use the web a lot too, you know, but it's been an interesting challenge and something I haven't really had to think about is how do I deal with people's assumptions and how do I make this easy to use and less confusing to them? A good example of one of those assumptions would be in the header, there's kind of like a global search bar. And on the homepage, when you click into it, it brings up a list of categories. And when you type in it right now, it filters those categories. And then when you go to a product page and you click in it and you type in it, enter, it's going to fire off a new search. And so contextually, the use for that same input is different depending on what page you're on, right? I think that, or what Jamie said anyway, was when she sees there's an input on the top, she expects to type in it, hit enter, and she expects to get new results. And so that was a difference in user assumptions versus how it was designed, right? On the homepage, you click in the search input, and it brings up the categories. And then when you type, it filters the categories versus a product page. When you type in their search, it actually does a new search.
So what did you end up doing in that case? Or if you haven't yet, what are you thinking?
I am thinking that it's more important, especially on the homepage top like that, like, you know, being able to click in there and have the categories pop up. Basically what happens is it fills the screen like cards. And so you get like a card deck of different categories like materials and rooms and stuff like that. But I think it's more important to cater to what the user expects there. And they expect when they type, it doesn't filter the categories. They expect when it types, it does a keyword search of products.
Sure.
Because that's how I see it happen most across the web. So I think what I'm going to do is revert the behavior to when you type in that box, it's going to fire the search and then have some other control that brings up that UI where you can pick through the card deck of tags, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, at least making the input do the same thing on different pages seems like probably a good move.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the consistency is the big thing, you know?
Consistency is so important.
Yeah, and I think that people would be okay with, you know, clicking that input and then being able to filter through those things if it worked the same way everywhere. And I think what's confusing is that it doesn't. And so the context changes and users generally are thrown off by something like that, unless there's really clear UI communication on why what's happening is different, but there's not. It just works differently. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, I could totally see where other people are coming from. And I assume that for every person that I can talk to myself and ask questions like that, there's so many more people that come with those assumptions, you know, and I really wish that I could tap into that somehow. But to me, that's a really interesting problem to solve. Like I look at a UI and I think, how are the users going to perceive this versus how I perceive it as someone who made this thing? And then I try to solve that problem as best I can.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to getting users in Nest Notes as well. I mean, I'm scared, don't get me wrong, but I'm also pretty excited. I think it's going to be so good. And one of the big things that has been kind of a surprising challenge so far with Nest Notes is trying not to make too many assumptions. Because as we build this product out, as you build out any product, it's so easy to say like, oh, well, it should do X, Y, and Z things and have this cup holder and whatever. It's really easy and natural to do because you're excited about building the thing and you want it to have all these cool features. But
right,
that's such a risk, and that's something I have to keep reminding myself about. It's such a risk to add too much to an initial version of a product because you don't even know what it's supposed to be yet, even if you think you do.
That's very true, especially pre-launch, you know. Everyone on the team comes up with all these great ideas like, oh, this site does this and it would be amazing to do that. But we don't have any users. So how do you know if people are even going to want that?
Yeah, it could be, the greatest thing, or it could be the greatest thing that no one cares about.
Right. It could be a distraction for the people implementing it. And also it could be a distraction for the users, you know, distracting them from what your core actually is, what your real purpose is.
Yeah, that's been such an eye-opening thing for me is just how much you actually do have to focus on making sure you're building out the correct core and not all the stuff orbiting it yet.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think one of the hardest things to cope with so far in being a CTO or designer developer is there are so many situations that arise at once, or there's so many things to be aware of at the same time. So before in consulting and doing greenfield projects, obviously, you know, having the best interest of the client in mind is important, but I didn't necessarily care about the business side of things. I didn't care about the numbers. I didn't care about any stuff like that at all. And so what's interesting is now conflating the two sides of it, the business side, like how expensive is this thing going to be? What's our budget? You know, typically a client would say like, this is our budget, let's keep it under it. But I'm working with the number they told me. And so now as someone that's part of the business, it's in my best interest to get that number as low as possible.
Right. And the other side of that, not even talking about money, is just that you have more of a connection to the business itself. So it's like if a client says, hey, let's have a sign up modal pop-up thing that just takes over the screen and says, hey, sign up with your email in order to access our site. You can say that's a really bad idea. But if they say, well, we need to do it, then that's, you just got to do it. But when you're actually like in the role that you are now, that's something where you have a lot more control over, and you have to kind of make those decisions on, you have to be both the one deciding or fighting for or against these things and the one who implements it. So that's kind of an interesting thing. It's like, if a bad decision is made for the product, it's still your product. It's not, you can't say oh, this is just somebody else's thing, and well, they made their own bad decision.
Yeah. It's also different too, having so many people that are reaching out, because before you usually have your project contact. If you're consulting, you talk to maybe one or two people at the most from a project. And now it's like, I'm talking to the marketing person, I'm talking to the owner, I'm talking to the accountant, I'm talking to the lawyer through the owner, you know, like just making sure everything is buttoned up. And so it adds in a whole nother depth to it. Like thinking about legal stuff, I don't know anything about that. All I can do is answer questions and try to understand what the lawyer is talking about. Like we talk about developers and programmers having to learn quickly, and this is just adding a new depth to that, because now it's not necessarily learning about technologies. It's not learning about new frameworks or whatever. It's learning about things that I have no idea about. And at least when you're learning a new technology, it's still rooted in technology. So you're still somewhat familiar with it, right? Whereas a lot of these business questions or legal questions, like I have no frame of reference. I've never studied that stuff. So it's like a completely new thing to learn from scratch. What's cool though is that even though a lot of this new stuff I'm learning from scratch, I'm still able to use a lot of the principles we talk about, like learning on demand and stuff like that. I'm able to use that in areas that aren't related to programming at all, which is kind of cool. So I feel like I've already done the hard work of learning how to learn and learning how that I learn, and so that I can take those ideas and apply them to legal things or business things. And I get benefit out of that, right? Because like I said, I've already done the hard work of figuring that stuff out beforehand, so I can just apply it to the different medium.
So this is kind of a weird thing, I guess a bit of a topic change, but before when I was doing, you know, when I was actually employed at a normal company, I guess you would say, I found that I would find themes throughout my week. It would be like, oh, I'm thinking about this type of technology thing. I'm thinking about, you know what, never mind. This is not useful. This is not useful. Sorry.
No,
sorry,
I mean, they
sorry,
give you,
sorry. Sorry.
They give you a project, and then you think about that project till that part of the project is done. Well, the difference is like you working for a construction company, and then you're assigned the wiring in the garage. Or if you're an electrician, you're assigned the wiring in the garage, versus you owning the home as an electrician and you're assigned the entire house.
Right.
To me, that's what the difference is there's it's so much more.
I'm an electrician, but I still have to fix the toilet if it breaks.
Yes, exactly.
If it's my house, right. Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel.
That's a pretty good analogy. Thanks again to Linode for sponsoring Does Not Compute. They make deploying and managing SSD-backed servers super fast and easy. Linode's pricing now starts at just $10 a month for a machine with 2 gigabytes of RAM. Learn more by heading to linode.com/doesnotcompute. And remember to use the promo code DoesNotCompute2017 when you sign up to get $20 in account credit. a hot dog sounds good.
Hot dogs are great.